the FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yes, hello. The FWA podcast is back. My name's Lee Phelps. We've had our winter break. All the journalists have been away to warmer climes, mainly Dubai, you know, just chilling out, sitting on sun lounges. And now they're back because the transfer window's open. Delighted to say that John Cross, the football writer with the Daily Mirror, is with us this week. Are you well, John?
Yeah, very good, thanks. I wish I had a winter break, I must say.
Yeah, no. When all those stories are around about winter breaks, I always think, you know, a lot of people in football say, nah, not having that, don't want that. I always imagine that the journalists probably think, yeah, I could squeeze one in. I could squeeze a break in.
Yeah, I could, to be honest, especially because winter climes, warmer climes at this time of the year. Just to recharge the batteries, I think, just for the transfer window. But do you know what? I just think if we had a winter break, I think most clubs, if not every club, would go and seek out a mini money spinning sort of friendly elsewhere anyway. So complete waste of time in my view.
Yeah, when you look at around Europe when the winter breaks on, there's loads of club friendlies. As many club friendlies as there are if you played league matches. We're going to talk about a few different things. West Ham and Manchester United have grabbed a lot of headlines this week after the cup weekend and midweek semi-finals. We're going to have a look at the transfer window and a kind of a journalist's take on it, if you like. And then we'll look forward to the Premier League weekend with some intriguing games, plus we'll get a bet of the week from John at the end. Let's start with the week that's just been, John. There was all that furore about the cup, West Ham resting players and being beaten 5-0 by a good Championship side in Nottingham Forest. Rested them, I guess, for the semi-final at Man City, and then got torn to strips by Man City as well. Not been a good week for Big Sam and West Ham, has it?
No, it really hasn't. I think it's been painful, hasn't it? I mean, I was sort of thinking about this during the Man City game, and it's kind of, he rested the first teamers at Nottingham Forest, and then the first teamers actually took a rest during the game against Manchester City. Yeah. Which seems a bit cruel, because I think that Manchester City at the moment look to me absolutely irresistible. I think their strength in depth is phenomenal in their squad. I think their power and their pace on the pitch is fantastic. I think they're, for me, the best team to watch in the Premier League, and you pity anyone that goes to the Etihad at the moment, let alone a team which is desperately short of confidence, short of belief. It does seem to me that the West Ham players don't really know what the future holds, I think. That little bit of uncertainty over the manager, there's been so much speculation about it. I think when owners as Sullivan and Gold did this week come out and give a vote of confidence, I don't think it reassures anyone in the least. It probably unnerves them that little bit more. But I just think that you felt as soon as City scored within the first 10 minutes, that was game over for West Ham. They just offered nothing going forward for me. They were weak defensively. Roger Johnson, relegation Roger as I called him, he just sort of came in and didn't make a difference. I think that the obvious place where West Ham are depleted is in central defence. Winston Reid, who's their key defender, has been missing for weeks now. They've really paid a heavy penalty for his absence. And it's very difficult now to see how West Ham can turn it around. I always think it's dangerous to rest players to save them for another upcoming game, because I think you're saying in that game you're taking away the focus for the next game. I also think you've lost some momentum anyway, and so I think it was a gamble that has backfired on Sam Allardyce spectacularly.
Yeah. I think a lot of people listening would concur with that entirely. It's not been a great few days for another club involved in the Capital One Cup semi-finals. Manchester United, 3 straight defeats off the back of a run of victories, where people were starting to maybe think, oh, maybe they are coming back to some sort of form. The confidence is so brittle, it seems, John, at Manchester United. Something that we haven't said for as long as I can remember. That a goal against them seems to send shockwaves through the players. Beaten obviously in the FA Cup. Beaten in the first leg of the Capital One Cup semi-final. Obviously, they got a return home leg, but they wouldn't go into that with that much confidence. You know, years gone by, if they'd lost at the Stadium of Light, they'd have been like, "Yeah, don't worry about it. We'll win. We'll easily win at home." Maybe not this time. I mean, it's lots of column inches been written about Manchester United. How bad do you think it is there?
Yeah, I do think it's bad. I just looked at that game the other night, and I felt that really Manchester United aren't playing with any sort of confidence at the moment. I thought that Sunderland really raised themselves very, very well. I think their cup record this season is frightening, isn't it? I think they won all six games. And despite their sort of terrible, sort of precarious position in the Premier League, they really turn it on for cup games. So it's by no means a certainty that I think United will turn it around, especially in the way that they're playing. I think the glaring, obvious thing for me, Lee, is that basically they are so short in midfield. I think they're short of quality, short of creativity. The players are kind of playing without a great deal of confidence. I mean, to be fair to Michael Carrick, he's just come back. So I do think he will help improve things. Fellaini has been something of a disaster, really, for form, for injuries. He's clearly struggling to settle in at Old Trafford. And I think that's something they've got to address. I mean... A mate of mine was saying works within football, and he was sort of saying, look at United this season without Fergie, with that squad, they'll finish outside the top four. And I just thought that was an absolute nonsense, really. And I do think people are too quick to dismiss the state of Man United's squad, because we shouldn't forget how easily they won the Premier League title last season. So that shouldn't be forgotten. But it all goes down to the power of the manager, doesn't it, really? And that how he could inspire those players before. And for David Moyes at the moment, he seems to be trapped in a cycle of bad results and bad kind of feelings about it. And at the moment, he just cannot turn it round. And so I actually thought that the Capital One Cup might offer some respite for them, and I still think they could really turn it round. If they could win a trophy, that would be huge for David Moyes, but I think the problems just go so much deeper than that for him.
Mm. And that wasn't Derek McGovern who told you that, was it, by the way?
No, it wasn't actually. But
he said that every year for the past two decades.
Well, absolutely. It's fascinating, though, isn't it? Because I looked at that and I thought, oh, you've got to be joking. And actually, if you break it down, the two centre-halves, I think, can be great. You know, Vidic and Ferdinand. Two strikers can be fantastic, obviously. And the goalkeeper, I think, is really good these days. But generally, that midfield's a worry. And that was the point that he was sort of making. I mean, he works sort of within football, this pal of mine, and he was sort of saying, just sort of get on that. Obviously I didn't, nor did he, but it's amazing how things turn out, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Briefly, the market for the seventh Premier League manager to lose his job, not a nice market, but it's out there. Sam Allardyce, 5-1 on, despite the what the owners have said. Paul Lambert next in the betting at 8-1. Alan Pardew, 10-1. Alan Pardew is always hovering around the top three in that market. Chris Hughton, 14-1. No manager to leave before the end of the season is 14-1. And David Moyes is next at 16-1. It would be a major story if David Moyes was to leave, and it seems very unlikely. Would you be surprised, John, if suddenly you heard that they were looking to move David Moyes on?
Yeah, I would be. I think looking at it, it's going to be difficult for United to finish top four. I still think they have a chance of snatching that fourth place. I think if they were to do that, that would be reassuring for David Moyes. I think if they don't finish in the top four and they have a spectacularly bad season, then who knows, they might have a chat at the end of the season. But I just don't see it happening during the season. For me, the real obvious one about those is Sam Allardyce, because, you know, he made it very plain that he got the board backing to rest those players at Forest to spare them for Man City. I presume he didn't get the OK, though, from the board to lose 5-0 at City with those rested players. 6-0, even. I'm doing that Dzeko there. And basically, he you know, I think he's very on thin ice there. I think if he has another bad result at Cardiff, then I think that bet is you're probably going to come in, I think.
The transfer window's open. Not that you really know, actually, John, because it's been very quiet, hasn't it? The January one tends to be a bit quieter. Love it or loathe it, it fills it column inches. There's rumour, there's speculation. I'm just interested in what's it like from a journalist point of view, a football writer's point of view. Is the phone red hot all the time? Do you get a little... I mean, I've worked at a much lower level than you in football reporting, and even at that lower level you still get managers who say to you things like, oh, could you just give a word about this player? And you get, you know, agents obviously at a higher level who want to try and get a word out about a player. Does that sort of stuff go on still?
Yeah, it does, very much so, I think. Got to be realistic about that, and the kind of you know, journalists will always protect his sources, of course, yeah. But they do come from far and wide, and, you know, whether that be sort of agents, managers, players. I mean, my phone on Tuesday was absolutely red hot because, I mean, Arsenal, that story about Theo Walcott breaking on Monday night, the scandal revealed that cruise ship damage, so that suddenly plunged Arsenal into looking in the market. So I was really scouting around on that. You just ring or text or message absolutely everybody that you think can have a relevance and sort of kind of would have an idea, whether that be a kind of an agent who's got a player who you think they might be interested, another sort of foreign journalist or a manager or anyone to kind of try and sort of glean a bit of information from. Generally, you kind of get wind of a fact of a potential target, and generally I think you always kind of know what a particular club needs. I think this week has been sort of interesting. It's sort of, for example, you know, Aston Villa going for Wes Houlihan, and that's the sort of story that's developing, and again you sort of kind of look around that sort of developing story about the sort of the bid's gone in, where do you take it? I mean, Houlihan is obviously anxious to go and take that up. So it's an interesting sort of kind of state of affairs. And you do get stories from all sorts of angles and all different sort of places. And, I for me in particular, who does a lot of kind of transfer deal chasing, I mean, it is non-stop. It's a very intense period. I think it won't be a particularly busy period at the top end of the market, because I think the majority of the big clubs will wait until the summer when the bigger players become available anyway. But I do think you'll see some loans. I think you'll see some clubs in Premier League trouble doing deals. And I think it will be a very busy month.
And I guess, you know, it must be, at the back of most writers' minds that you don't want to become a cog in the wheel of the transfer window either, do you? You don't want to be someone who's almost being used to facilitate a deal or to make a price go higher or whatever else.
No, I think that's a fair point. I think that sometimes, you know, I mean, particularly I think on, I think there's various deals that sort of come about. I think obviously some clubs really want to keep it quiet because they want to do a deal very quietly. Those are the deals that you really want to get into. I mean, some clubs now have taken to sort of issuing statements and denials and sort of confirmations. I mean, look at Manchester United. They were so public last summer, for example, in their pursuit of Cesc Fabregas. That's unprecedented for Manchester United, and it has become almost sort of a media event. I mean, it's interesting looking at sort of Hull coming out this morning and sort of saying that Shane Long, they haven't reached an agreement with that. I mean, that again, from a club statement point of view, I think it is pretty a new thing, really. I think the challenge for any journalist is to uncover the big one that people don't want you to know about. I think there's other ones that obviously sometimes if a player is put in a transfer request, for example, that then, you know, the player who wants to move or the agent or the club that wants it, you know, are quite happy for it to be out there, for example. And so kind of sometimes you can sort of come across those sort of stories. And then sometimes you'll just stumble across it. But you're right. I do think, and sometimes that being that cog in the wheel, you know, there is a danger you can drive things. You can make it difficult almost for a player to stay put if it's out there that he wants to go, that he wants to move on, and another club is interested. So I do feel from a journalist's point of view, just because of this sort of kind of very high profile nature of transfer these days, you can become that cog in the machine as well.
At William Hill, they usually have some markets about which players are going to which clubs. So keep an eye on the website for those. It's always interesting if with the advent of Twitter as well, you can sometimes beat the traders to a bit of a scoop. At the moment, there's a market available on the website for Manchester United. A lot of the chat is about them. So who will Manchester United sign before the 2nd of February 2014? All the names are there. Fabio Quartararo is heading that market at the minute because a lot of the chat's been about him recently, 6-4. But there are lots of other names. Ander Herrera is in there. Leighton Baines is in there. We've also got the likes of Joao Moutinho as well. Mario Mandzukic is in there. So there's a few names kicking about. Even Phil Jagielka at 12-1. That would be a big story if he was to move. It is one of those things, though, where you can, with Twitter, you can keep an eye on it. And sometimes you can just maybe beat the bookies to the punch with these things, John.
Yeah, I think you can. It's quite enticing, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sort of, it's amazing. Yeah, sometimes you sort of see stories unfolding a little bit on Twitter, whether that be sort of following a journalist or following a player, seeing little bits of fallout. It's interesting there, though, isn't it? I mean, I think I look at Leighton Baines now and think probably he'll stay put.
Yeah.
Marijan Mandzukic, you would think would stay until the summer, but I think he'll move on when Lewandowski moves on. I think this is part of the problem, really, is that the bigger clubs, the bigger deals, they don't happen that often in January, and so I do think it will be a very, very interesting window. But Man United surely have got to be worth a look, because they need to address it, and as much as anything, I think they just probably need a new face to come in and give the whole club and the whole squad a bit of a lift.
Let's have a look at this weekend's Premier League. There's a few interesting games, not least that Manchester United-Swansea match. So often we see an FA Cup game or a cup game repeated in the Premier League, and Manchester United are odds on to win this one again, 2-1 on. Swansea 11-2 and 16-5 the price for the draw. Lightning doesn't usually strike twice. So the TV games are Hull versus Chelsea, Manchester United Swansea with the one we just mentioned, Newcastle Manchester City on Sunday, Stoke Liverpool on Sunday afternoon, and the Monday night game is beleaguered Aston Villa versus Arsenal. A few other good battles at the bottom as well, the likes of Fulham Sunderland taking place this weekend, and Cardiff West Ham, intriguing games. Is there one that caught your eye, John?
Yeah, I do look at Hull v Chelsea, and I think that could be a really good game. Mm. I think that Hull, when you look at their home record, it's been quite exceptional, really. And it does actually, if you check it, it really does take you by surprise, really. They've only lost twice at home this season, which is impressive in itself. And out of those games, they've actually only conceded 6 goals this season at home in their 10 games at home. So I do think it's 6 goals, and it really is an impressive record there for Steve Bruce. He's given himself one hell of a chance to stay up 10th position. I was at the game Chelsea Hull at the start of the season, and that provided in a way a little bit of a snapshot of how things have developed for both teams, because Chelsea, I think, were exceptionally untouchable in the first half an hour, probably the first half, and then Hull just calmed it down. They brought on sort of Livermore and Huddleston, made a big difference, they settled down, and actually I think that's been the story of their season. I think Huddleston has been one of the unsung heroes of the Premier League. He's gaining a bit more recognition now. He's playing well. Hull, very, very good sort of defensively as well. And Chelsea, just away from home, they're liable to the odd wobble. Losing at Stoke, of course. I mean, I think they lost at Newcastle when people perhaps didn't expect them to do so. And so I do think that Chelsea's still just a little bit unpredictable. And sometimes they do struggle a little bit for goals away from home as well, because the strikers in particular are not firing. So I think if there's one game that kind of just might upset the title race a little bit, I think Hull just might get a result. Even if they don't win, I just fancy they might even get a draw against Chelsea.
Yeah, the draw price is 11-4, so that's a bit bigger than normal. Hull are 5-1 to win at home, by the way. Chelsea 4-7. So there's a couple of ways of playing that. Then you could just take the draw, 11-4. Hull and the draw, so you get the Hull win and the draw included in that, is 5-4. So just a touch over even money. And the draw no bet, which a lot of people like, where you get your money back if it's a draw. But you still get paid out if Hull win. That's 100-30. So there's a few ways of playing that one. And I think you'll get a run for your money, like you say, John, because you know they keep going as well, don't they, Hull? You know, they've got something going at home, as you mentioned. And like anyone who's not sure of that, just look at those results, as John said, at home. They've even when they do lose, they don't lose to you don't lose by lots of goals, do they?
No,
right in there.
No, pitching. They don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other interesting thing about those odds, which I think are staggering, really, 5-1 to win at home. Mm-hmm. It's amazing, yeah. That, isn't it? I mean, that's got to be worth surely a bet. I mean, Chelsea odds on away from home, and that's not surprising, because obviously Chelsea are up there fighting for the title and are just running into a bit of form. But, oh, wow, when you break that down, there's sort of a three-horse race, you know, both teams in the draw, 5-1, the sort of the outside bet for the home team to win. And when you consider their home form, I think that's a really good little bet to have a look at.
Yeah, Chelsea are an interesting one, aren't they? Because, I mean, you know, everyone, no one's saying crisis, but people are kind of being quite negative about them. Well, they're only 2 points off Arsenal and a point off Man City, who everyone says are brilliant. And you look at them, I mean, the away defeats against Newcastle and Stoke, and Everton actually are the three defeats this season. So are susceptible away from home. I mean, you'd say Hull are maybe equally as good as Stoke at home, aren't they? So you know, there are chances there. I can definitely see why you like that one. That'll be John's bet of the week then. John, thank you very much. We've gone a bit over. I think we've been chatting for about 25 minutes now. I said I'd only keep for 20, so I'll let you get on with the rest of your day. Enjoy the transfer window. Hope it all works out well for you.
Alright, thanks very much indeed.
Cheers, John. John Cross, the football writer for the Daily Mirror. You can download this podcast at williamhill.com/podcast. You can also go to the FWA website, which is footballwriters.co.uk, or you can go to Audioboo, where it's available as well. That's audioboo.fm. We'll be back next week with one of John's colleagues from the football writing community. In the meantime, if you're having any bets on the weekend's football, then very best of luck.